Coming up on podcast 1066, Ford's oh-so-tentative battery plan. Stick around, I've got all the details. So on the podcast today, how GM are getting the Lyriq and the Hummer to market much quicker than previous vehicles. An update on Volkswagen's Project Trinity EV. And why Renault is gearing up for big EV sales by the middle of the decade. Well, good morning, good afternoon, good evening, whether you're listening around the world or watching now on YouTube. Welcome to the show. My name is Martin Lee. I go through every EV story, so you don't have to. So, Ford are throwing a ton of money at battery development. Tesla's Battery Day, VW's Power Day. And now Ford? Is it the same thing? No. It's good news if you want to buy an EV from Ford in the future. But what does it really mean? Well, we're going to find out on the podcast today, so stick around. Well, we'll start with where Ford were, by the way. And Ford were... Let me read you a quote from the former president and CEO. He was Jim Hackett, said last year, this is only last year that he said this, it's a question that when maybe a year ago we started to see lines starting to arrange around make versus buy. In other words, make your own batteries, buy them in from a third party. Versus own versus source. So we had a deep discussion about this. I've met with a number of people that you know are in the supply side of this, and it was our estimation, in fact, our whole team went through a really deep dive on this 6 months ago, that the supply chain has ramped up since Elon built his Gigafactory. And so there are plenty there that does not warrant us to migrate our capital into owning our own factory. There's no advantage in the ownership in terms of cost or sourcing as what Ford can draw on. So yeah, really clear indication there from Ford only at the end of last year. No interest in building gigafactories, no interest in doing their own battery thing. There's plenty in the supply chain that they can get involved with. And so they can just, like all their other suppliers of the parts of their vehicles, they can bring them in. Now, fast forward to today, and it's looking slightly different. Ford taking steps to procure their own batteries. Not quite as straightforward as it sounds. Ford is going to invest almost $200 million in a new lab as one step forward on making its own battery cells for EVs, the company announced today. The funds will go towards making what's called Ford Ion Park. Good name. And it's a pilot facility for production that's going to open by the end of next year outside Detroit. It's 200,000 square feet, and it's a lab that will accelerate development of technologies as they plan to eventually manufacture. This isn't building a pilot line or anything, but they will eventually manufacture new battery cells and batteries, says this CNBC report. And that is really critical in terms of the direction the company goes and how much money they're going to spend on these kind of projects. Now, are they the only company, EV, you know, combustion car company in the world with a lab? Absolutely not. So many of these companies have their own testing benches, testing facilities, but this seems more of a sign of intent than we've ever heard from Ford before. Worth reporting, they are so many people's favourite brand. They've built that brand, obviously, over such an incredible amount of time. So it's a very important company when we talk about their EV plans. They're not there yet. Mustang Mach-E's doing a great job, and we look forward to finding out more about how well the Transit does and the Ford F-Series, starting with the Ford F-150 electric. Now, the company currently purchases cells from South Korean-based SK Innovation. Ford's new facility is not full battery cell production like GM has. Now, GM is spending an awful lot more money. That would be $4.6 billion being invested in two US battery cell plants with LG Energy. And Ford is hiring here 150 people for Ion Park. Some of them are on board already. Such a fantastic step that Ford are making. Rather than just denying the need to make their own cells, they are following, they're not really first movers in this, not even second or third, but they are following so many others in terms of needing to make that supply chain much more vertically integrated. And it's not clear how far they go back to the mine in this, but it's certainly a really big step for Ford, and it makes me so happy because although I'm not really in the market for that car, that brand, I just want to see more great EVs on the road and talk about them on this podcast and explain them to you as well. So it's kind of a big deal, and it's such good news that they are accepting. Hang on, we need to know more about what we're doing here. Now, Ford Authority have been leading with the story about what they'll be doing at Ford Ion Park, saying they're going to integrate innovation opportunities across all aspects of the value chain, from the mine to recycling at end of life, working with various teams from within Ford, including experts at Ford's new battery benchmarking and test lab, Ford's customer service division, and key suppliers and partners. And this 200,000 square foot learning lab will include pilot scale equipment for electrode, cell and array design and manufacturing as well, using state-of-the-art technology to pilot new techniques. They're also talking about solid-state batteries, which is probably more than just saying a buzzword to get people interested. So from what I understand of this, they are ensuring that they've got a really clear understanding of battery technology in preparation for making their own. So, of course, they will want to take in the supplier's products, validate them, work out the best use case and how they can integrate them into their vehicles. In the grand scheme of things, I can't believe I'm going to say this. $200 million, not a lot of money, but a really good piece of news in terms of Ford's move forward in EVs. Now, let's talk about a company that has been moving forward very quickly. Some would say not quickly enough. That would be General Motors. And a great article here from Motor Trend about how the Lyriq and the Hummer came to market so quickly. And again, if you are one of those saying, quickly? They're so far behind. Like, GM should have been doing this 10 years ago. Well, I see your point. Reservations for the Cadillac Lyriq begin this September. Deliveries of the vehicles Q1 next year. So we are less than a year away. Lyriq's driving around, and possibly, I've heard from a few listeners of this podcast, because I was talking about how we don't have the Cadillac brand here. Is it a kind of older thing? Do younger buyers not aspire? One of my listeners who's in his 20s said, no, absolutely, I'm going to be putting an order in for one of these. I love the look of the Lyriq and just kind of the interior styling and things like that. And so that goes on sale this year. But the original timeline was for the end of next year to go on sale. So how did the GM engineers bring it forward so much, says Motor Trend? Well, credit a mix of cost-cutting necessity, a need for speed, the flexibility of a new architecture, and the realization that greater reliance on virtual tools can get the job done. The Lyriq is part of a new wave of EVs from GM on its BEV3 architecture, and you will see it referred to as Ultium batteries, developed alongside LG Chem. First one is going to be the Hummer. It's officially the 2022 GMC Hummer, and it's out the end of this year. Lyriq comes next, and both are being developed twice as fast as they would normally do. Necessity is indeed the mother of invention. GM slashed their costs by $4.5 billion annually in 2018. That forced designers to use virtualized development and more extensively, also less reliance on building prototypes, which is massively expensive, takes a long time. Also wind tunnels, physical crash testing they've cut down on, because now you can simulate all of that and you don't have to spend a month rigging all the sensors for a crash that takes milliseconds, because all the data points are in the system. And so you can use some insanely good virtualized systems. And I was talking to a company that do this recently, just as part of my research. They provide this service to these kind of car makers around the world. And the simulations mean that you can crash a car hundreds of thousands of times if you want, and never bend a piece of metal until you get the design right. Then you validate it. And they were saying that now the validation between real life and simulation is so close that you can bring cars to market incredibly quickly. So what are the other platforms that are important? Well, you would say Volkswagen's MEB platform, Hyundai, Kia, etc.'s EGMP platform. And when I say platform, I don't mean the exact shape and, you know, wheels on each corner, although that is kind of what people think about with a platform. But think of something more modular. In other words, the essence, the design of how you put that skateboard platform together, but they can get bigger and smaller. Talking about Volkswagen, by the way, let's talk about Project Trinity. They are hard at work on their next-gen EV, currently known as Project Trinity. It's going to come out in 2026. And so we're talking platforms here, actually, because it's kind of interesting about the cars that you and I will be buying in the future. This is a car from, it'll be led by Audi, but it's a whole new platform. and it's called the Scalable Systems Platform, and it allows for more range, more advanced autonomous tech, and a rethink of VW's business model, says Inside EVs. This new architecture is important to delve into because it will replace the current MEB platform. Now, I thought that would be around for, you know, 10, 15 years to really get an entire life out of it, or two or three life cycles of a model. But VW at their recent Power Day talking about how they will move to this new platform. They'll replace the MEB platform, which the ID.3 is on, the ID.4, all of the group cars at the moment, but also the PPE platform, which is being used for the group's larger, more luxurious EV offerings. That isn't even out yet. It's going to underpin the Audi A6, and they're already thinking about what comes next. The SSP platform will be used for about 80% of VW's future models, and it's going to replace, like I say, MEB around 26, 27, when you'd have to say the ID.3, ID.4 are going to be coming to the end of their Mark 1 life, and so probably the Mark 2 ID cars will probably be on this platform. And that is so important because, you know, this podcast is a mix of talking about startups and companies like Tesla that start with a blank sheet of paper, all the way through to those OEMs that have got hundreds of thousands of employees around the world, which they have to, you know, look after, and hundreds of, you know, millions of brand fans around the world that they want to bring with them on this EV adventure. And they've all got different priorities and challenges and opportunities as well. So this looks so interesting that, you know, I know 26 is 5 years away, but it's going to be so, so important. I'll pop a link to both Inside EVs and Autocar, where the original article kind of came from, the interview, in the show notes, if you would like to read a little bit more about this. Next, we'll talk about Tesla tweaking the application for their German Gigafactory, the ministry saying. Tesla's application tweaks to its planned Gigafactory just outside of Berlin, the German state in which the plant is being built, said today, adding it was not possible at this stage to say how long it would take to approve these new plans, according to Reuters, who say Tesla had said on Monday that the construction of the factory outside of Berlin was moving forward and production and deliveries on track for late 2021. The Ministry of Agriculture in the German state of Brandenburg and the amended said the amended application would include the construction and operation of a battery cell factory, which we knew because it had been flagged by Tesla, but I'm not sure whether this is the first time it's come up in these official plans. And there is a slight, I would say, moving back of the timeline there. I keep hanging my hat on customer cars coming out of Berlin in the end of June, beginning of July, following the earnings call yesterday, where they simply said that production ramps up towards the end of the year. There was still no clear guidance on when the first car will come out of the factory. Now, bearing in mind that in Shanghai, from groundbreaking to the handover of the Model 3, the Elon dad dancing episode, we should find the video for that and show it on the YouTube version of this. It was a year to the day. It was exactly 12 months. And so if they head towards the end of 2021 for Berlin, then that will be longer than Shanghai. But, you know, it's not a fight. So we'll watch that one next. Renault, Group Renault, is gearing up for EV sales of 65% by the middle of the decade in just 4 years. The CEO of Renault, Luca Di Meo, has set new targets for the electrification of the brand in Europe. By the middle of the decade, their electrified, careful, not electric, and electrified passenger cars will be 65%. By the end of the year, it'll be 90%, says Next Green Car. And I think that's a really sensible target. Obviously, I want to get there tomorrow at 100%, but for a company like Renault, that's led, of course, with their partnership with Nissan, Mitsubishi, part of the alliance, those important cars that were out, you know, pretty early doors, Nissan Leaf, worldwide car, Renault Zoe that I own, that's a, you know, European car. And so an early lead and work to do. Okay, yeah, I'm not going to deny that. But by 2030, emissions from Renault vehicles sold, at least in Europe, so that is the company, so there's the company like Alpine that includes, and Dacia as well, the cheaper bit of Renault, will be reduced by 65%, but only by 35% worldwide. So that suggests they're expecting a significant hybrid share of new car sales by 2030, says this article. Also talking about diesel engine development, which I won't go on too much about in this podcast, but safe to say, They're not making any new developments. They're just going to improve the stuff that they have got. And like I say, I'm a two-time Renault EV owner myself, and they have an early lead, certainly here in Europe. I know that that doesn't translate everywhere, and I hope they keep it going. Really hope they keep it going, because I love my little car. And we'll wait and see. They definitely need to broaden their product lineup. The Dacia, which is like the cheaper bit of Renault, the Dacia Spring is not coming to the UK in right-hand drive. Sad face. I wish it was. It will be Europe's cheapest EV. Sadly, Europe's slowest DC fast charging EV as well, taking that crown off the woeful Mazda MX-30. But the Spring, if it's at the right price point of 9 to 11,000 euros with various incentives around parts of Europe, there's no reason not to have one of those on your driveway to do all of your errands in. So, okay, let's move on. And let's talk about Amazon's first electric vans appearing in yet another new place. It's Denver this time. The first Amazon deliveries using Rivian's EV vans reaching Denver this week. One of 16 US locations they're planning to deploy EVs on, says the ColoradoSun.com website. The Denver area routes are part of an initial test in different climates that's also occurring in a few other US cities before the Rivian EV program expands. Now, the Rivian vehicles, the R1T and the R1S, they're the not the Amazon ones, but Rivian's own ones, are going to have a range of, you know, plus minus 300 miles. These vans, these are 150 miles on the Amazon delivery vans, which has been described as limited range. I think it's absolutely fine. But for the area that this newspaper covers, the Boulder, Denver, Thornton neighborhoods all around Amazon warehouses, an Amazon spokeswoman, Nikki Wheeler, said, and I quote, "The range we're sharing is what we've been seeing based on current testing," end quote. So that, to me, sounds like a huge range for an Amazon delivery van. Now, I know distances are shorter here because everything's closer together than in the US. And so a lot of these vans will be doing urban routes. They'll be on a set route that is mapped out by Amazon, you know, to the centimeter and the minute and the second as well. And don't I know it, because I get the notifications on my phone of when they're going to be here, and they're always pretty accurate. So these vans know exactly where they're going to be, probably, well, definitely terrain, probably traffic as well. So all of that data can go into how much range they need. They'll all be charged overnight as well, leaving the depot with a full battery. So whether they are constantly working, I mean, the Amazon deliveries, they won't be delivering overnight, I wouldn't have thought. But they might be moving things around, so there is an overnight chance to charge there. But even if they do, say, two working shifts and one off shift, I still think 150 miles is still plenty. What do you think? Let me know. You can email me anytime about any of the stories that we cover on this podcast. hello@evnewsdaily.com. That is a cute delivery van. They don't have to make them that good looking. I think they're brilliant. All right, coming up, we'll be talking about Samsung's first US battery factory. Now we'll talk about Hyundai's N-Day, teasing performance electric. This is, you know, BMW have their M brand and Mercedes have AMG. Hyundai have their N badge on a wild streak right now, building high-performance versions of their existing vehicles like the Kona N, and announcing their new electric plans as well. They're going to base it on the same platform. There I go again, talking about platforms. Broken record. With the EGMP. So that is the Hyundai Ioniq 5, the Kia EV6, the Genesis cars, not all of them, but some of the Genesis cars as well, basing their high-performance electric cars on this platform, indicating that zero-emissions performance is top of mind for them. Says Motor1.com, lessons from the ETCR program will have informed Hyundai's high-performance aspirations, evidenced by the RM20e concept, which, yes, please, is utterly gorgeous, full of aero flicks and body bits and a big spoiler on the back and diffuser as well. So brilliant. Love electric racing. So, so cool. And that was developed in partnership with Rimac with 810 horsepower, which again, it's moderately bonkers. Okay, let's finish off on the podcast today talking a little bit about Samsung and their first megafactory, or gigafactory possibly, in the US. And it's all thanks to their friends at Rivian. So if you're watching this on the YouTube version, the rather lovely R1T is on screen right now, which will be the first one they deliver, followed by the R1S slightly after. Samsung's first megafactory on American soil is looking more likely after it agreed a deal to provide batteries for Rivian. The potential development of the mega plant in the US would represent a massive step forward for Samsung SDI, this article says from Business Insider. And it's behind a paywall, so I won't give you all of it, obviously, out of, you know, kind of respect for their content they've made. But it's worth reading. If you are a subscriber to Business Insider, they point out that Samsung SDI only has one factory outside of Asia. That's in Hungary. Now, Rivian has yet to reveal its production targets, but it'll start at 40,000 EVs a year for the R1T and the R1S and go up to 300,000. Now, Simon Moores is the managing director of Benchmark Mineral Intelligence, and he said this, and I quote, "At a rate of 40,000 EVs a year, they'll need over 7 gigawatt hours of lithium-ion battery cells every year." So 7 gigawatt hours per year at 40,000 EVs a year. If all of that supply is from Samsung, then that's the equivalent of 12% of their annual capacity as of last year. So any multi-gigawatt hour contract does require new facilities to be built. He also pointed out that shipping a lot of lithium batteries over long distances, whether that's from Hungary or from Asia, means it's very difficult. They're hazardous goods to transport. Not impossible, obviously. It's just not as easy to do as to build a gigafactory on home soil for Rivian. So that's your EV News Daily for today. What do you think? A load of, once again, really positive EV news flying around. So much more we could talk about today, but I'll leave it there. Let me know your thoughts about the stories we covered. You can, if you want to, email hello@evnewsdaily.com. Same email address for our question of the week with emobilitynorway.com. And we're asking you, what's the most effective consumer education regarding EVs? What is the most effective consumer education regarding EVs? What's the best thing we can do to educate those not in the know more about electric vehicles? So let me know. Thank you very much to everyone on Patreon who supports and funds this podcast, and I really appreciate it. You haven't got to, it'd be free, always free, but you can check it out, patreon.com/EV News Daily. A mention for our premium partners, Phil Roberts, who runs Electric Future, EF.Energy. Also, Brad Crosby, thank you, Brad. Porsche of the Village in Cincinnati, Audi of Cincinnati East, Volvo Cars of Cincinnati East, NationalCarCharging.com and AlohaCharge.com. Derek Riley has got an EV Review Ireland YouTube channel. Check it out. And Richard at rsev.co.uk for buying and selling EVs in the UK. And of course, emobilitynorway.com. Have a good one. See you tomorrow. And remember, there is no such thing as a self-charging hybrid.